know, seen sheets, you know, in like the VA and different things. Like, if you have these symptoms, you know, you probably have PTSD. And I'm like, yeah, quite a few of those.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Again, today we're in LifeWord Studios in Conway, Arkansas, broadcasting in over 150 languages to 127 countries with a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. Today I have with me Paul Tucker, who's a great friend. We've known each other for probably 2 years now, 2.5, yeah, somewhere in there. And it's just been a great friend to me. And June is PTSD Awareness Month. And you know, being military, former military, you see a lot when it comes within the realm of PTSD.
Yeah.
What are some of the, well, you have a diagnosis of PTSD.
Yes, I do.
So when that all began, was it kind of what is going on, or did you kind of have the inclination that this could be what it is?
So I think my family recognized it well before I did. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really that I was like in denial, but I didn't think it was as bad, which is common for veterans and, you know, law enforcement. Like, yeah, I'm not that bad. Somebody's worse off. And that's, you know, such a big downfall when it comes to veterans and everything. But, mm-hmm, I was diagnosed officially, I believe it was in 2019. Mm-hmm. So I deployed in 2010, 11, and then, you know, so many years later. It was just, you know, I've seen sheets, you know, in like the VA and different things. Like, if you have these symptoms, you know, you probably have PTSD. And I was like, yeah, I've got quite a few of those.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Was there ever kind of, though, a state of denial that that's probably what is not happening here?
I wouldn't say there's a state of denial. The denial was, again, I think it was that somebody else probably is worse off. You know? So, like, I'm not that bad, you know. You know, we all deal with it type of thing, and just, you know, drink water and drive on type of thing. Yeah. So
take an aspirin.
Yeah.
Call me
in
the morning.
Ibuprofen and some water. And
yeah.
Change your socks.
Yeah. So what were some of the symptoms that you had at the very onset?
So when I first got back from Afghanistan, it was actually really hard for me to make eye contact with even my family. Mm. I had family that was there the day we landed, you know, back in country, and it probably took me about 2 weeks to really start kind of making eye contact. Mm-hmm. And then from there, just a lot of anxiety, depression. I had some panic attacks, which if you've never experienced one of those, it kind of feels like you're drowning. Mm-hmm. you know, just hypervigilance was a big one. So those were some of the main ones that really stood out the most.
Yeah, but in that combination of symptoms, would it be fair to say that that would be normal for someone who had just come back from Afghanistan?
Yeah, absolutely. You would think so. And I guess, again, I think that's part of why I didn't really think too much into like the PTSD diagnosis, or that, you know, I really needed to affect it. Just, you know, part of, you know, rehabilitating back to being back in the States. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long were you in Afghanistan?
It was right at a year.
Okay. Yeah. And I imagine, well, it has to be the culture and how things operate and work there, even though you are, you know, a U.S. station or however it's labeled there, and you're around Americans, the culture is still much different.
Yeah.
Than what you have at home.
Yeah, and I think even if you don't experience combat, which there's a lot of people that never leave the FOB. You know, that's what I think you're trying to get to, or the COP, or, you know, there's different operating bases out there. But for the ones that don't even leave, you got to think, right? You're going to a foreign country where there is war going around you. There's potential for indirect fire, you know, mortars and, you know, rockets, stuff like that. But there's also you're leaving what your normalcy, you know, even if you're a young soldier, military member at 18 years old, you're going to a foreign country, mm-hmm, barely out of high school, you probably don't even know how to write a check at this point, you know, and you're completely removed from your family. Mm-hmm. So I think there, even if you don't experience combat, you're going to have some of those stresses, you know, mm-hmm. for anybody that goes over there. Because I know, you know, there's times where if a military member died or they're missing or something, they would mm-hmm. do a blackout, which means we had no communication with back home. Mm-hmm. So they cut off phones, internet, all that. And, you know, your family, I'm sure, is feeling the same thing. Like, oh, you know, what's going on? Mm-hmm. That turmoil. But also having that thought back home, you know, mm-hmm. having that helplessness of, like, I can't help my family if something's going on right mm-hmm. now. So, you know, as a man and as a leader, you know, even if you just have any family, mm-hmm. you know, that's a traumatic thing. That can yeah. be a traumatic thing.
Yeah. I know within my PTSD symptoms, one of my triggers is not having a phone, you know, that I have to have it. Here a few months ago, you may remember there was a blackout of service from AT&T for several hours. Well, I was actually on the interstate driving to Oklahoma when it blacked out. And I was like, what is like, I can't handle this. I don't have a phone. OnStar wouldn't work. What if we were in a wreck?
Yeah.
You know, which led me to question, well, what did y'all do, you know, before cell phones if you had a wreck? Well, we went and knocked on the door of whoever. Well, I wouldn't be able to do that. You know, there's too much whose door am I knocking on? You know, you don't know what you're getting
nowadays,
into.
Yeah.
And so somebody may look at that and say, well, that could be a normal stressor for anybody. And it could be. Any symptom of PTSD could be a symptom of just about anything. And so particularly when we look at PTSD, there has to be that the symptoms have lasted more than 4 to 6 weeks to actually get a PTSD diagnosis. So if you're back home, you're experiencing these things, how long did it take you before you realized or somebody else said, hey, I think there's something going on, before you actually sought treatment?
Oh, it was years. I imagine it was pretty early on that it was recognized from my family members. I couldn't, you know, exactly remember, but I know it was pretty early on. But again, I just had that, like, oh, it's, you know, I got buddies that have things inside them that weren't in there before they went over there, you know, stuff like that. So I've always had that mm-hmm. thought. But yeah, I didn't start getting treatment until it was like 2019.
Yeah. So how does that classical psychologist question here, how does it make you feel that your trouble, your result of active duty is mental and emotional while other people have physical ailments? Did it make you feel like yours was less than?
I don't think so, because at that point, I feel like I had enough knowledge and know, like, just knowing so many different guys that have it mm-hmm. or just, you know, different, you know, military members that I served with and everything that have it. Like, there's a lot more people that have the PTSD, the mental mm-hmm. scarring than they do the physical scarring from these wars we've been going through.
Yeah. I read a statistic the other day, which you were in the Army, right?
Correct.
The Army now has the highest suicide rate amongst all branches of service. Why do you, and you may not be able to answer this question, but why do you think that is specific to the Army?
I don't know if this is the case, but I imagine it's just like anything where there's a higher number mm-hmm. of soldiers. I think the Army, I know it used to be, but the Army is the biggest of the branches. So with any statistic, if there's a higher number, they're going to, it's going to be worse. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But also, yeah, I don't know. That's about the gist of it. But also, it's probably the ones that are there the most.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, that of all of the Army bases, the one that has the highest suicide rate is in Washington State. Wow. And so, you know, you can understand that being that there's not as many daylight hours, even in the, like, June or July, everybody is up there, and like the high today is supposed to be in the mid-50s, you know, and so you're taking people from all across America and sending them to a place of of really environmental isolation, as they would know it. So as that relates to you being in Afghanistan, that change of climate, did that do anything to your mental health in that aspect?
I don't think so. The only thing that, as far as the climate, like the stressors that kind of there was when we first got over there, you know, we were like 8,500 feet above sea level. Mm. So going from being, you know, a few hundred feet above to going out there, it took a little bit to adjust. But then not as far as coming back, you know, over there you have those dust storms, which are wild to experience and stuff. And we weren't in too extreme of climate. It wasn't like overly hot. We saw snow a couple times and kind of like here, you know, where it's by noon, it's melted. Yeah. But nothing really makes me think of that being a trigger or anything like that.
Yeah. So when you realized, hey, this is probably what I have, what was your next step?
So got the diagnosis, like I said, I think it was like 2019, like early 2019. And then I think the initial thing was medication, which that seems to be what happens these days, you know, Medicaid before therapy. I did some therapy. I've had good psychologists, psychiatrists, and I've had some not so good ones, some that are, you know, kind of pretentious, and but didn't help that shortly after that diagnosis, COVID happened. And that was a big trigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and which I'm assuming, again, that treatment plan was through the VA.
Yeah.
And so it seems like the tenure of doctors at the VA isn't very long.
No.
And so you know, and specifically in our mental health, you need a physician or a therapist that is going to be long-term.
Yeah.
So that you don't – and you mentioned, you know, the standard treatment is medication. The APA actually says the best course of treatment for any mental health issue is medication with therapy. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is we get you chemically to a stable point so that we can delve into what is actually happening in therapy, mm-hmm. so you don't just go off the rails, you know, in therapy. And as you know, and anybody who takes any mental health drugs, you got to find the cocktail that works for you.
Yeah.
And it almost seems like, hey, I'm a guinea pig, or they just keep throwing medicine at me and I'm taking way too much medicine. But, you know, when we look at that, okay, if you have diabetes, you may take metformin, you may take insulin, but all of those things are specific to what you need. Mm-hmm. And so within the mental health realm, you know, if it is anxiety, panic, there's one medication for that. If it's depression, it's a different kind of medicine.
Yeah.
If it is, you know, that you're having certain emotional things, then it's another medicine. If it's behavioral, it's another medicine. So for our listeners, if you're thrown a bunch of medicine, you know, don't think that you're really bad or, you know, something way off. Because one of the most common questions I have when people come to me for therapy, after their initial telling me what's going on, they say, I bet you've never heard anybody as messed up as I am. And I said, oh, yes, I have.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because everybody thinks their problem is just the worst.
Yeah.
And it is to them. You know, a minor surgery for you is a major surgery for me. Mm-hmm. And so as you begin to delve into this treatment, was there ever a point of where you felt like you were getting this, but maybe you didn't deserve it, or maybe that it wasn't really working and maybe you should just forget about all of it and try to deal with life?
Yeah. So, like I said, a couple things happened, around COVID, right? So that was a huge trigger for me. Mm-hmm. You know, 'cause at that point I was still in Detroit and going to work, driving into the city, you know, a generally very populated city, when there's like nobody around, which triggered me to thinking about, you know, before being attacked.
Mm-hmm. Right?
If there's nobody on the streets overseas, there's you're probably about to get attacked, ambushed,
right,
or whatever. So that was a trigger. And then it was very apocalyptic, which, you know, just was weird. but also at that time, you know, it wasn't as easy to get, you know, therapy or, mm-hmm. you know, medicine, and it wasn't necessarily at the forefront right then because just so much was going on in the world. So I know I kind of stopped trying. I think that was still in the kind of the phase of trying different medicines and stuff. So I think I stopped taking anything. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got down here that I got a new psychiatrist, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, psychiatrist. And like you said, the tenure is not very long in the mm-hmm. VA. I had finally, I think it might have been my second psychiatrist here, and then I finally was on a medicine that I felt was working well for me. Mm-hmm. And I ran out. You know, it was on me. I didn't call for a refill or whatever. And I called, and they're like, yeah, you have to talk to your psychiatrist so we can mm-hmm. get a refill. And called the psychiatrist, like, well, I'm new. I've never seen you before. I need to, like, see you before I can have this. And I kind of had a meltdown. I'm mm-hmm. Like I'm struggling really bad right now, and you're denying me what's been prescribed for a while. So I think that's a really big issue within the VA is, you know, having all these residents that come through, especially in the mental health, right? I can understand where it's a normal, you know, MD type of thing where, yeah, okay. But if you're about to, you know, like for my instance, like I had to kind of get aggressive, and it wasn't, you know, it was just, I was reacting. I was having bad symptoms. I was struggling in that moment because they were like, yeah, we have to see you before you come. Sometimes it's like weeks or months before you can get seen. I'm like,
yeah.
What are you talking about? Like, I'm really struggling. And I ended up getting it squared away. And now I'm with a provider. He's like, he's been there for years. He's like, I'm not going anywhere. So mm-hmm. I was fortunate in that mm-hmm. aspect, but that's a big issue, I think, within the VA.
Yeah. Well, even within the civilian world, if you were to try to get an appointment with a therapist or a psychiatrist, you're looking at 4 to 6 weeks yeah. to be seen. And a lot can happen in 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And in the availability of mental health professionals is very low, but also the payment of Medicaid or Medicare for mental health services is very low. For instance, there was this lady that wanted to come to me for therapy, and her Medicaid plan only paid for one therapy session every 2 weeks. And she was one of those that probably needed it twice a week,
yeah.
you know, to be able to regulate emotion. And so there are all these barriers that, and, you know, it's the sad thing because you're already depressed or you're already anxious. You're already having sometimes thoughts of suicide, and now all of a sudden it's like you're just a number on a chart yep. and you have to wait in line to get seen.
Yep.
And I know it's even more prevalent within the VA system, but as you said, you would think the VA would put more stock in mental health services, being that the high rate of mental health issues coming from people who are associated within the military forces. Mm-hmm. So in getting that treatment, what are some things that you can say, practical things that you did outside of therapy or medication that helped you?
So I've been big for a while now, trying to make improvements every day. Right. Physically, mentally, and spiritually. So physically, right. Obviously I work out mm-hmm. most days. I
do. You lift trucks.
Yeah. I do that next weekend. Yeah. So I do jujitsu as well. Very physically active. I had a doctor tell me when I got out of the Army, actually, he's like, if you ever stop working out, your body's going to crumble. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, copy. Like I'm going to mm-hmm. keep working out.
Yeah.
So that's a big one. There's a lot of, the We Defy Foundation is for combat veterans. I know a lot of successful it's like a therapy, really. I know, you know, like Ryan and a bunch of us, we all do it, and it's it really is like a therapy for us when it comes to PTSD, because you can't think about those things when you're right. trying to prevent yourself from being choked unconscious,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So stuff like that, and then spiritually, just trying to, you know, get in the Word, changing what I keep I talk about it like this, changing what I ingest, you know, whether it's food. What I watch and what I listen to. So like, I don't like 99% of the music I listen to is, you know, Christian music now. We don't watch movies that we used to watch or, you know, used to think that were funny or like entertaining, you know, if it's something that, you know, the Bible says not to watch, you know, if it comes up, we, you know, turn the movie off or, you know, skip the scene.
So you don't watch a lot of movies?
No. Yeah. You know, and Brittany, I love her to death, but she likes to watch like the horror movies. And sometimes I'm like, nope, cut it. Nope. Yeah. But yeah, just those few things, right? Just changing what I ingest, what I watch, what I listen to, what I eat, you know, that's a big part of what we do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Paul talks about that in scripture, that we feed the spirit or we feed the flesh. Mm-hmm. And when we feed the flesh, it can, or feed the spirit, it can overcome the flesh. So it makes practical biblical sense that that's what you do. What are some of the things, though, that you do in situations where you know, and I think triggered is way overused.
Yeah.
But in recognizing that this is an area where you could be triggered, what are some practical steps that you take to, and let's pretend that it's a situation where you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
This is what you have to do. What are some ways that you try to cope with that?
You know, I'm trying to think of something that's kind of triggered me here recently. I think one of the ones was we was traveling and we ended up going into a Buc-ee's, and it was shortly after the world kind of opened back up.
Yeah.
After COVID, and that was the first time I'd been around that many people in a while. So I had to kind of go in and get right back out. But sometimes it's as simple as, you know, doing some like breathing exercises or just kind of even like temporarily removing myself from the situation, right? Because sometimes I've had it where just going into like a Walmart marketplace, with not even like a tremendous amount of people, but where there's just enough people where it can make me anxious, and just kind of got to remind myself that, like, you know, you're okay. Just do what you got to do and get out.
Right. One of my triggers is I can't sit with my back to a door.
Yeah.
You know, but like if I go out to eat with one of the guys in our men's group, I can do that because I trust them enough that, but you know, if it's my wife or kid, not that I don't trust them, but I'm their protector. Yep. And so, you know, there are situations where that's just not possible that you do that. And so I try to, even if we have to wait a little longer, we'll wait so that we can get away to be facing the door. You know, there are those little things. It may be, you know, veterans deal a lot with the 4th of July, you know, with fireworks. Even though I know and you know that veterans know that that's fireworks and not rounds being shot, but it's that immediate boom that could trigger that PTSD. And so when I say trigger PTSD, I'm talking about trigger a symptom of PTSD. So when you are in these situations, let's say you're in a situation, you're triggered, what do you immediately do?
Man, and honestly, it's been a little while since I've been triggered. I'd like to think that I'm pretty in control now. I'm trying to like think of the last time I was like triggered. You know, sometimes loud noises, it will make me kind of turn and face the threat. And maybe if I'm carrying, I'll kind of motion in that direction or whatever. But, loud noises. Like I remember, recently the transformer outside of her house blew, you know, right across the street. That's pretty loud if you've never heard that. Stuff like that. Like, I still have that hypervigilance, so I immediately, after I listen for a second one or something, and I go and check it out. Yeah. But,
so has there ever been a time since your diagnosis that you felt calm and safe?
Yeah, I feel pretty calm and safe most of the time now. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that has to do with my spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of it, honestly. 'Cause prior to moving down here to Arkansas, I was nowhere near where I am today, mm-hmm. with my walk with Christ. And that's a huge part of it, just having faith that whatever happens to me, God's got me. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a huge comfort. And that, you know, there's times where I'm like, you know, I avoid a lot of things. Like, I don't like going downtown. Mm-hmm. I just try to avoid situations that might put me in a spot to where I have to do something.
Right.
You know. But I think the biggest part is, honestly, just thinking about it right now in this moment, is that my spiritual growth.
Okay. So how would you, when you say spiritual growth, that could mean a plethora of things.
Sure.
So how have you found the most effective way to do what you do that causes you to grow spiritually?
Like I said, I pretty much only listen to Christian music. Mm-hmm. Like, on my way to work, you know, I listen, my workout music is Christian metal, you know, like, but also listening to sermons, listening to the Bible app, just, you know, trying to immerse myself in worship or the word, especially on drives and stuff like that. You know, obviously going to church, Bible studies, all the things I go to, you know, obviously how we met at a men's Christian retreat. Mm-hmm. I do the same thing with my wife. We've gone to like 3 or 4 different ones. We haven't even been married 2 years yet. Like I told you, yeah, recently, I'm signed up for another one. I'm just, mm-hmm, constantly trying to feed myself more, mm-hmm, in just different ways. And so I can, you know, discern from things that I don't believe are quite biblical, mm-hmm, but also, mm-hmm, so I can get different perspectives.
Sure.
And everything like that.
Yeah. You weren't married when we met, but you were, right, engaged, I think, maybe.
I don't recall.
Yeah, but even prior to marriage, y'all were going to marriage conferences.
Yeah, we were, you're right.
Yep. Yeah, and so I remember asking you, well, you're not even married yet, why would you go to a marriage conference, you know, marriage enrichment? And you told me it was regular maintenance,
mm-hmm,
that, yeah, how you do regular maintenance to a vehicle, you do within your marriage. And thankfully, you have a wife who understands where you come from, understands the difficulties and the challenges that you face, not only as a veteran, not only as a man, but within your diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I could pretty honestly say she challenges you. I mean, you went without eating any vegetables for how long that she made you do that?
I'm still not eating.
Oh,
vegetables.
You're still not eating. So in having a partner who understands, and I know when Jennifer and I got married, it took her a long time to realize that, you know, for instance, if I was triggered, I didn't want to be touched.
Yeah.
And a woman's first instinct is to hold and to hug, you know, in those moments. And I'm like, I don't want you to touch me right now. And then they get upset because they feel like they're not being loved. And that is very easy to get in the crazy cycle where they don't feel loved and, yeah, they disrespect, yeah, and, you know, go back and forth. So how vital has your marriage been in helping your mental health?
So it's funny you mentioned that, and I didn't think about it until you just said that, but same situation happens to me. Sometimes I'll have my days, like, you know, yesterday I was having a day, but it gets frustrating for her where she's like, I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what answer to give her. I don't know.
I just need you to be present.
Just be there. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. You know, we don't, as men, we're not big on talking, mm-hmm, as we both have podcasts and try and talk. I think just having a great Christian wife that's knows the role as a helper, And just like is so good in that way. Like we are very good at picking each other up, right? Like when I'm having bad days, she'll kind of step up, and you know, because we have chickens and dogs and everything, and that, you know, is a task in itself. But then same thing, if she's having a bad day, whatever, I try and do the same thing. You know, I'll cook dinner, you know, vice versa. We always are picking each other up in those senses, but also helping keep each other accountable, with staying in the Word, going to church. I've recently, you know, I used to smoke cigars every weekend. For a while there, it was like almost every day. When we got married, that was often. It was a couple times a week, and it's gotten down, and now it's like special occasions. Alcohol, we don't drink anymore. So just having that marriage to where you're equally yoked and you're trying to be better in all aspects. Definitely helps.
Yeah, you mentioned you had a podcast. I've been on it once. Tell us just a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, so the Wisdom for Warriors podcast, the idea came from, you know, because you know the guys I work with, we're always working out, we're always doing jujitsu, we're beating each other up at lunch for fun. So Proverbs 27:17, iron sharpens iron. Mm-hmm. So that was the idea with it, but there's about 36 podcasts with iron sharpens iron or something along those lines out there. So, the Wisdom for Warriors, just building up strong men in a weak world is the kind of the idea there. So I like to, you know, get on there and ask different Christian men that I know what they think a good Christian masculine man looks like. You know, I've had you as a pastor. I've had a couple pastors on there. I've had my wife on there. We do episodes on there talking about our successes in marriage and everything, because that's part of it, right? Having a good, as a warrior, you should have that support once you're not fighting. This year has been a lot of traveling and stuff for me, but I know I did an episode, you know, being that it is PTSD Awareness Month, and I just found out also it's Men's Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yeah.
I did an episode with my buddy who recently went through a program for PTSD. Just anything that's kind of on my heart. Like I've had it on my heart for a while to do something more as I get more into my Christian faith. And, I wasn't even on social media until I started this podcast back up, and it was just something to try and get out there more. So I just leaped at it. It's nowhere near as professional as this. Half the time you can hear my dogs clacking around and everything. But
we're very blessed here to be able to use these studios. Yeah.
But I will say last week, one of my professor, my jiu-jitsu coach, one of his students recently moved back to Texas, but he told my buddy, my professor, he's like, yeah, you know, I listened to Paul's podcast and it's really helped me. And honestly, if it can help, I don't need to know about it. But sure. if I can have that thought that at least one person's going to hear it, and it's going to help them, that's all that matters. Yeah.
So where can they find your podcast?
So I'm on all major broadcasting, so Spotify, iHeartRadio. I don't have any episodes really on YouTube right now because I only have one visual episode. Apple podcasts, so all the major ones.
Okay, so all the major streaming networks.
Yeah, streaming ones, yep.
Okay, so wrapping this up in a really pretty bow here.
Okay.
If you had one message that you could tell anybody in the world when it comes to mental health, PTSD, what would that message be?
So I'm getting ready to go to I signed up to go to a program with the Mighty Oaks Foundation with Chad Robichaux. And one thing he mentions and talks about in his program is if what you're doing isn't working, why not try something else? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that on the way over here, and I'm like, man, that not only for your mental health, but just life in general. Mm-hmm. If you want to make a change, just using those, thinking about that statement and make a change, right? If you don't like the way you physically feel and you're eating bad things all day, why don't you cut some of those out and try something else?
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be in better shape, why don't you once or twice a week, instead of taking the elevator, take the stairs. You know, just those little steps. And that's kind of like to also piggyback what I was saying earlier, right? You don't have to run a marathon on your first day, but, you know, just take those little steps. Change what you listen to. Change what you watch. Change what you eat. I think that's probably what I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Paul, thank you for being here with us today. It's always great to have you. All right. It's been, as you know, Mental Health Month, Men's Mental Health Month Awareness, PTSD Awareness Month. Just want to tell you, if you are suffering from a mental health condition or you're suicidal, you can always text or dial 988 for the National Suicide Hope Line. If you're in the state of Arkansas and you're a veteran with a mental health crisis, you can always reach out to We Are the 22. That's We Are the 22, the numbers, 22.org. And a great group of folks there, and they'll come to your aid. So thank you for listening today, and we hope that you have a good rest of your week. Goodbye.